what substance or substances were you addicted to? And let's start, I guess, with Mike.
You know, my main preference was always lean towards alcohol. It was cheap. It's available everywhere. You don't have to break the law to get it. It has a lot of attractive character traits, you know, as a social lubricant. It's widely acceptable, not in the way that I was doing it, but drinking, no one's looking at you sideways if you're having a few drinks until it gets out of control. But, you know, along with alcohol, you find yourself in these social settings and situations where alcohol might be your drug of choice, but all these other things start to pop up when you're drinking. You show up at a party, they're doing other drugs, all kinds of things. So as an addict, you know, you might have a preference of pot or alcohol, but anything can happen and everything's on the table.
And so did you find yourself addicted to other substances, or was it just the alcohol?
Alcohol was my big thing, but something that's really popular here in town is methamphetamine. And when you use methamphetamine, you can drink longer. So they kind of started to go hand in hand. But alcohol was the gateway to everything else.
Okay. And Marilyn, what about your situation?
For me, prescriptions is kind of what ended up being the downfall. I started drinking at a really young age, smoking pot at a really young age. At 14, I was drinking fairly often, and then started into heavier drugs. It did acid after that. And so everything kind of spun out after that. But when I got prescription pills from doctors, you know, legally, and then started to abuse those, and that's when everything started to get out of control for me, which led down a road of methamphetamines also. So pills were my big gateway, I feel like, to where my life became completely out of control.
And you are a couple. Were you together at the time when this happened, or?
When we got together about 3 years ago, we were both out there active practicing addicts and alcoholics, and then started our sobriety journey together.
And I imagine it's very difficult to break an addiction. How were you able to do this?
For me, it was definitely one step at a time. You know, you're drinking, you're using other drugs, you're smoking cigarettes. So you're doing all these things, and I definitely didn't go cold turkey on all of it. You know, I got away from the hard stuff first, and then I went to a couple failed rehab treatment centers that didn't work for me, didn't stick, worked temporarily. But when you get back and you're around the same crowd and the same people, you're back to doing the same thing. So then got off the alcohol. Then I was chain smoking. It was like, I got to have something as my last fix. And then eventually I got to where I could, strong enough, I gave that up too. As far as how I got sober and in a good state of mind was just, you know, I opened up with going to 12-step help meetings. I started with those pretty heavily. I was going to trying to do the 90 and 90, which is 90 meetings in 90 days. I made it maybe 60 meetings in 60 days. And then, you know, you get comfortable in your sobriety. You get comfortable with being, you're back to living a good, solid life 2 months in. So you, for whatever reason, you feel like you don't need it as much. You get a little more just good in your sobriety. So then it dropped to 3 times a week. Now I try to hit 2 meetings a week. Sometimes it's only one. Sometimes I'll go a week and not hit a meeting, but I start feeling that itch to get back to the meeting, and just stay in contact with other like-minded people. So 12-step meetings have been huge for me, and staying busy. You know, I don't leave myself a lot of idle time. I'm working out, I'm running, I'm in the gym, I'm in the pool. I try to stay busy so I don't just have idle time to spend in my head eating myself up.
How long have you been sober?
I'm on July 4th. I had 18 months. So I'm coming up on 2 years here. I think January fourth, I think, is 2 years.
And how did you get addicted in the first place? Were there circumstances in your life or just a habit started? Or?
Yeah, you know, I always like it to just be in, I wasn't finding something that was keeping me occupied. I was bored. So I was one of those, I want to work hard, play hard, party hard type of people. So when I'm done working, I'm done playing, being working out and stuff, then I'm going to go and party hard too. So really for me, it was a boredom thing. And then it went from I'm bored, I'm going to drink every night, to it morphed into this vicious addiction that I had no control over and I couldn't stop even if I wanted to.
And is it the 12-step meetings that helped you? Did you mentioned you tried rehabilitation centers. Did anything else help, or is it really the 12-step program that's made it work for you?
You know, people try rehabs. They try geographical changes. To do those things and not be in some type of 12-step meeting, you know, being NA, AA, Al-Anon, to just try to stop on your own power, for me, that's, you're not giving yourself very good odds. So you got to do the meeting part. And the program isn't just come to meetings and we sit around and BS about old war stories. You know, we're working a spiritual program. There's 12 steps that help you deal with old resentments, which are a huge trigger for people. So there's a lot to the meetings. It's not just a bunch of drunks sitting around telling their old war stories. And you got to, you know, for me, I had to have that. You know, it was just one piece of a multi-pieced fix for my addiction.
Okay. And Marilyn, a bit about your story. How did you become an addict?
You know, it's such an easy question to ask with such a multifaceted answer. I don't know that I could really put, there wasn't any one big traumatic thing that happened in my life or anything that kind of led me down that road. I think part of it was boredom, like he said. I think for young people especially, it's really easy in Ketchikan being on this island to be stuck with this island mentality of like the whole world is just what happens here on this island and doesn't feel like there's much else going on. If you're not involved in a lot of sports or extracurriculars or anything, you just kind of have all this idle time. And so for me, it was just more of a, it was fun until it wasn't anymore. And it took over life. So I don't know how to answer that question exactly. How did I become addicted? I don't know. And I think that's what happens with a lot of people is that you don't realize what's going on until it's already happened. You don't realize that you're out of control until all these things start happening in your life. And hopefully you realize, wow, my life's become unmanageable. It's time to make a change. Unfortunately, I've known way too many who never do. They don't ever really wake up or have that realization of that my addiction has taken over or I am an addict or I am an alcoholic and try to make those changes. They just think that that's normal for them.
So for you, you acknowledged it, you realized it, and decided to make a change.
Mm-hmm. It didn't happen that easy. I started to see the red flags of issues. I started to not be very good at my job. I started to not be a very good mom. At first, when I started to abuse the prescription pills, I felt like I had more energy and like I could be the queen soccer mom and do all the fundraising and all the stuff that you have to do as a mom that sometimes feels overwhelming. And it helped me for a short amount of time feel like I could deal with all of those stressors and manage it better. And very quickly that became very unmanageable. And then I was not doing work duties, motherly duties, doing all the things that I knew I should be, you know, doing. If anyone out there has ever experienced any withdrawal from pills, it's a pretty physical, uncomfortable feeling. And there were some people that I was hanging around with who started to say that amphetamines help cut the cravings and help cut those withdrawal symptoms. So I had this great idea that we were going to do some amphetamines to be able to get off of the pills. And that's like that sick addict thinking that I, even though I knew there was a problem, I knew there was issues, I wanted to get better, I was still making really ridiculous decisions even in trying to get better. And so that led me down a road with amphetamines and methamphetamines. And it wasn't until after I spent a summer really, really sick that I realized none of those things were helping and that I needed to try something completely different. And at that point, I made the decision to go to I went to a doctor's appointment, and I didn't know who to talk to or who to get help from, and I just told the nurse there that I was talking to everything. And she suggested that I speak to someone at Gateway or Aquila. And so I couldn't get an appointment there right away, so I just walked straight over to the emergency room and said I needed to talk to somebody. And I just – I got to this point where I guess wasn't embarrassed. I just got so – everything got so unmanageable that I just wanted it to be better, and I needed someone to help me do that. And so something in that moment made me not afraid to talk about it. And so a lady named Jan from Aquila came down to the emergency room and talked to me. And we talked about what kind of help was available through Aquila, and I ended up there and having an assessment done and going through intensive outpatient treatment, which was about a year and a half worth of time spent in groups and individual appointments and getting some counseling and kind of trying to talk about what maybe some of the things were in life that helped lead me down that road, and a big thing being around other women who had experienced some of the same things in life and had gone through the same addictions and some different addictions also, but finding that common ground with those people. And that small group of women that I started outpatient with, we're still very close today. There were five of us that were there. Four of the five of us are still in recovery, and we stay in really close contact. And so being willing to talk about it, being willing to admit that things had gotten as bad as they were, and then doing whatever was suggested at that point. And one of the other things that was suggested along with the outpatient, intensive outpatient treatment was meetings also. And I got a sponsor, and she helped me walk through the steps, and we talk about a lot of things. And without the outpatient treatment and the meetings that I still attend, I absolutely don't think I'd be sober today.
And how long have you been sober?
So I have about just over 90 days now. I was close to 18 months as well. I had enrolled in school and was, life got really great and super busy and, was on the right track to do, you know, all this good stuff. And everything got pretty overwhelming again. And I went back, withdrew from going to meetings because life was busy. And, That's kind of the net, you know, and being away from the meetings and all the people who I knew lived in recovery and are good influences. I kind of had, not on purpose or not intentionally, but had just shied away from going, and I got weak and ended up reverting back to some of those pills that had helped me get through situations before. So that happened in May. And was super hard because, you know, we had had the same sobriety date and had kind of lived all of this together. And I felt like I let everyone down and had to start over and kept it a secret for a while because I was embarrassed. But eventually was able, all of the work that I had done in outpatient and in meetings, was able to pull from those tools and talk that all out again and kind of get through that and start over. And so I'm back at 90 days again, but that's okay too. You know, there's a lesson in every misstep that we have, and just because you go to treatment and just because you go to meetings doesn't mean life gets perfect. It just is there to help you try to handle life on life terms, as it said.
And you both mentioned that it was often boredom that sort of started or made the drugs easier, in a sense. So I guess, how is life with the drugs and how is life sober?
You know, life with the drugs was chaos all the time. There's always, you know, there's always this procedure that goes into, it's maybe a little bit different with alcohol in different ways. But with drugs, you're spending time trying to search them down and find people that have them. There's this, like, dance almost, this sick dance that happens. And when you wake up in the morning and you're trying to figure out where you're going to get your next fix, who has what, who am I going to hang out with today? Or I owe so-and-so money for yesterday's shenanigans, and so we got to avoid them today, so we're going to have to go somewhere else. And so there's just this constant chaos and watching your back and, like, hunting all the time. And it just – it consumed your life just as much as the doing the drug part, finding the drug part was also part of it. And then in all of the chaos you create and destruction and damage that you do when you're out there active – there's always family or husbands or wives or friends or bosses or people you're trying to dodge and avoid all the time. So it's just this constant negative chaos that's around you all the time. And then in sobriety, I mean, we have a lot of kids and have a lot going on in life. So it's chaos, but it's in this good kind of a way. We're healthy, we're busy, we're active in the community, you know, going to the rec center, taking the kids to events that are around in town, plugging into the community. It's easy to say there's nothing to do in Ketchikan. There's a million things to do in Ketchikan if you look. It's just once you get in that mentality, it's easier to find the drugs and the party than it is to find a community event where you might, like, have to actually interact with other adults who act like adults. So it, you know, it's busy in sobriety and it's work, and you have to do things every day to put your sobriety first and your recovery first and make sure that that's an important thing that you work on every day.
Mike, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, chaos, I think, is a huge understatement as far as just life in general when you're in practicing addiction. She pretty much covered everything. Life is so much better without alcohol and drugs in my life. Everything is just a lot more manageable. You're, you know, getting sober and getting some sobriety time, that's the beginning steps of the work ahead of you. You know, you have relationships to try to rehab. You have, hopefully you haven't lost your job. Hopefully you haven't lost your children. There's all these things that are there that need to be fixed. So just getting sober, it's not like poof, I'm sober, life's perfect. It's a good start, though. And yeah, you're a better partner, you're a better employee, you're a better dad, you're a better son, you're a better sibling, you're a better, you know, boyfriend, you're all these better things just being sober. And it, for me, it gets better. You still have issues. We still grind on things. Without the alcohol and drugs there to fuel it, though, now we're two adults on the same plane trying to work our things out instead of these, you know, this chaos, like she put it.
And there are people out there listening, some who may be addicted to something and struggling to quit. Do you have any advice for people out there?
You know, I think the number one thing that holds people back for me is getting clean, getting sober, getting some sobriety time, and thinking you can go back doing business as usual. I'm clean, I'm sober, I'm going to go hang out with the same people. I'm clean, I'm sober, I'm going to hang out at the same dive bar. I'm clean, I'm sober, I can be lazy. I'm clean, I'm sober. That you can go back to any of that. It doesn't mean you have to turn into this recluse jerk, but you have to revamp your whole lifestyle. You no longer hang out with those same people. It doesn't mean you can't be cordial and see them at the grocery store and say, hey, what's up, to whoever it is, but you say it as you're walking by. You don't, you know, I'm not going to get into all the details of how to do that, but you need to not hang out with those same people. You need to not hang out at those same places. And a big one for me is minding my own business, you know. Staying active, minding my own business, and focus on life, which is work, family, and your own health. And those three things will take up the majority of your time. So stay away from those bad people. If they offer you anything at all, they're not your friend.
For me, I think I would say there's so much shame an embarrassment that comes with addiction and alcoholism. And so knowing that there's places you can go and there's people that you can talk to, you don't have to be embarrassed or ashamed to tell your stories. Odds are likely that they've heard your story time and time again. Go to Aquila, talk to some of the counselors up there, go to meetings. There's great AA and NA in town. Those meetings saved my life, and I've watched them save other people's lives over and over and over again. It's easy to dismiss or think like AA is just for a bunch of old guys, or it's not for me, I'm young. And there's, you know, there's not a ton of young people in recovery, but I know that there's a ton of young people that are in active addiction. And so we could fill the rooms and we could fill recovery in Ketchikan if everybody started to work as hard for your recovery and your sobriety as you'd work for your high today. And your tomorrow is going to be much better. There's, you know, lots of different places you can call to get meeting schedules or to find out what time the meetings are, where the meetings are at. I remember I Googled volunteer stuff in Ketchikan, and Ketchikan Wellness Coalition's page came up, and I found all kinds of information on their webpage. They can be a good contact. The hospitals, the doctor's offices, there's a lot of ways that there's a lot of avenues to get you help. The first thing that you have to do is ask. And if you're not willing to ask or reach out to anybody, then that isolation in your addiction, you know, will probably kill you one day.